already killed Aaron, but there was no time to think about it now.
On the way!
It popped up.
The previous message regarding Alex Stowe was inaccurate. Please disregard.
Alex sighed in relief. Thanks, Clive. You're not half bad, you know that?
Clive smirked.
Well, I'd hate to have you go off to battle and get killed without me at least doing one decent thing for you. You know, karma.
Wow, how big of you.
Read your instructions, you don't have much time.
Clive melted into the blackboard.
Don't die,
he called out as his face disappeared and the announcements appeared on the screen again.
I'll try not to,
Alex whispered. He pressed the first announcement and read, Alex Stowe, the Quillatory is on the march. Your breakfast has been tubed up to you. Please report to your squad on the lawn immediately. Your commander is Simba. He will have your orders. Thank you for your dedication and service to Artime. You are a valuable part of our community. Marcus today.
Alex picked up the tray of food from the tube and ate quickly, and then he washed and dressed. He grabbed his component vest, checked the bulging pockets for all his magical items, and slipped his arms through it. 10 minutes later, he joined the throngs of Artimaeans, easily found Simba, and stood near him. He felt a lot less scared, knowing that Simba was there to lead his group. Megan joined him.
I'm so glad you're here. I thought you did something stupid, she whispered.
She eyed the cheetah nervously.
And I'm really glad he's on our side.
Simba growled.
I can hear you, Ranger.
They were soon joined by three others, a young man named Peter, an older woman named Pauline, and a rather large white squirrelicorn named Rufus. Across the lawn he saw Samhede and Lani under the leadership of Aria the Gerino. He waved and watched Lani's anxious face relax. She ran over to him, pressed a note in his hand, and said,
What was up with that report about you?
Alex just shrugged and shook his head. Lani glanced back at Aria and ran back to her post. Alex caught Samhede's eye. Samhede had a strained look on his face. He nodded slightly to Alex, and then he dropped his gaze.
I wonder if he knows about Will, Alex whispered under his breath, and if he's really on our side.
He knows now, growled Simba. As for the other, I guess we'll find out soon enough.
Alex startled.
I've got to start remembering that you can see and hear so well, he said.
The great cheetah chuckled under his breath.
I prefer knowing what you're up to, Stowe.
At that moment, Mr. Today and Claire Morning appeared on the rooftop of the mansion. Claire clapped her hands for order, and all in front turned to hush those behind and direct their attention to the leaders.
Commanders, please give your orders and take your stations. The Quillatory is in sight.
Alex and Megan gulped simultaneously and exchanged a nervous glance. Alex quickly peeked at the note from Lani. It read,
Die 1,000 deaths.
He looked up, alarmed, and searched for Lani, but she was nowhere to be found.
What a horrible thing to say, he thought,
shoving the note in his pocket.
I thought she was over being immature.
He straightened his vest, going over the various components one more time, even though he knew their locations by heart. Peter and Pauline whispered together. Rufus rose up on his haunches as Simba faced them.
Our squad was specially designed to complement one another, he began. Rufus is agile. He can both climb and fly. His eyesight is tremendous, as is his bite and skewer.
Simba indicated the squirrelicorn's foot-long horn, which grew from between his little squirrel ears.
Pauline was a theatre focus. Peter's a writing instructor. Megan is a musician, and Alex is a painter.
He paused and said wryly,
And in case you didn't notice, I'm an enormous stone cheetah with wings. I come with a major drawback. I am not easy to hide. Therefore, our squad will be an open moving target, but our combined skills should overcome most obstacles. Please follow my instructions at all times, especially when we face combat. Trust my orders. From my vantage point, I can see much farther than you. And because of my experience as a predator, you should trust my instincts. Any questions?
He looked at the five who faced him. None had questions.
All right. Where the front line stationed at the road? in Quill.
Simba turned and walked toward the opening in the wall.
The front line!
A chill of fear moved through Alex as they approached the place where the gate once stood. It had been one thing to go from Mr. Today's office into Aaron's dormitory room, but it was quite another to face this ominous, fateful entrance again after nearly a year, and then to stand outside it and take the brunt of the attack. It was completely nerve-wracking. Simba held his head high as he walked nobly like a prince through the wide opening. Mr. Today, who now stood at the entrance, murmured words of protection on each of their component vests as they passed through into the bleakness of Quill.
"The words of protection will last the entire day. Please don't take your vests off. They will help keep you safe."
The man put his hand on Alex's arm and whispered,
"Do you remember the command I used for the glass wall?"
Alex, whose heart was pounding by now, nodded.
"You are capable of casting that, Alex. You are capable of a lot of things. Just be aware that it will shatter if it's struck hard enough, so it's not permanent. Above all, have confidence in yourself and you will succeed. Control your emotions and you will hit every time."
"Yes, sir,"
Alex whispered, feeling confidence from the pep talk. He nodded and followed Simba onto the dusty road to stand and wait for the Quillatory vehicles. There was nothing in this desolate part of Quill that could be used for cover, except for a few scattered posts that held up the barbed wire ceiling. Alex breathed in the stifling air of Quill, his eyes darting around, feeling very exposed. Other squads lined up behind and alongside Simba's, and soon there were over 100 defenders in place inside Quill, ready to face the oncoming Quillatory. Alex could hear the other squads behind him talking through their plans. The majority of the defenders remained in Artime, spread out to protect the mansion, hidden behind the lush foliage, and grouped under cover along the edge of the jungle. It would be easier to fight in Artime, where the Quillatory would be in unfamiliar territory, and so shocked at the sight that they would have a disadvantage. Soon the squealing and squeaking vehicles could be heard. Alex and Megan stood tall, trying to catch the first glimpse, almost like little eager children of Artime who could hear a marching band but not yet see the approaching parade. Just inside the opening into Artime, Alex could see Sam Heed and Lani's squad waiting. Alex caught Lani's eye, and when she smiled, his stomach flip-flopped, despite her mean note. He mouthed the words, "Be safe." Lani bit her lip and nodded.
"You too," she whispered.
They did not have long to wait.
A fleet of rust-colored vehicles, flanked on both sides by endless lines of marching soldiers, thundered closer. They raised no weapons. Slowly, the vehicles came to a stop in front of the entrance to Artime. They faced Simba head-on. When they came to a halt, a burly man stood up inside the front vehicle, his head and shoulders well above the windshield. He squinted as the colors of Artime bled through the opening in the wall. Sam Heed recognized the man as General Blair.
"Attention, worthless unwanteds! I have a message for Alexander Stowe," he yelled.
Simba growled angrily. Alex felt his heart drop and splatter on the road. After a moment, Simba nodded to Alex and growled in a low voice,
"Step forward and claim it."
All the squads inside Artime, who could see through the opening, watched the scene unfold. Alex's breath was shallow and his teeth nearly chattered together. He stepped forward as bravely as he could, cleared his throat, and said in his deepest, harshest voice,
"I'm Alex Stowe."
The general stared him in the eye for a long moment, his upper lip frozen in a sneer. Alex stared back, unflinching.
"The message is from the High Priest Justine."
He cleared his throat authoritatively. Alex didn't move.
"The High Priest Justine thanks you for the warning you gave to Aaron Stowe 2 nights ago."
As the general spoke, 2 Quillatory officers in the seat behind him hoisted something long and bulky over their heads.
"She only wished that this," the general said, as the officers flung the object into the grassy opening of Artime, "had truly been you."
On the ground, inside a sheet of thin, ragged linen, was the lifeless body of the general's own son, Will Blair.
battleground. Alex remained steady, despite the gasps around him, gathered his wits, and spoke in a smooth voice.
"If you live through the day, General," he said, "perhaps you'll ask the High Priest, Justine, why she's too afraid to come here and deliver that message herself."
"Get back," Simba barked, as the far flank of Quillatory marchers raised long, rusty metal weapons to their shoulders. Simba's wings burst open as a shield, forcing Alex behind them as loud blasts erupted from the Quillatory, followed by raining thuds of pellets against the stone statue.
"Fire!"
commanded the stone beast. Alex regained his footing as the others in his squad sent a round of artistic fire at the Quillatory. Those soldiers who hadn't been hit rushed into Artemy and began firing on the unwanteds within, and the vehicles roared and coughed in preparation to enter through the gateway. Alex sent off a round of blinding highlights from his fluorescent yellow pen, hitting the drivers of the first two vehicles squarely in the eyes, as well as General Blair himself. The first vehicle lurched wildly and crashed into the wall, sending the general and two others catapulting towards Sam Heed and Lani. The second vehicle smashed into it, causing both jalopies to hiss and shoot boiling spurts of water back at their occupants. Sam Heed, still in shock at seeing his former friend lying dead and witnessing Will's own father show absolutely no signs of emotion or remorse, realized with full certainty that the Quillatory was no longer anything he wanted to be a part of. How foolish he had been. And seeing the heartlessness all around him, it was so much worse than he remembered. He felt the old familiar rage boiling up tenfold. With a wild yell, Sam Heed pulled a spiked metal star from his vest and flung it with all his might at the groaning general. It struck the man in the throat and embedded deep within. General Blair's blinded eyes widened and then closed. But there was no time for anyone to reflect, as Artemians all around Sam Heed fell to the ground. Another round of pellets from the enemy blasted and chinked off Simba, leaving him no worse for wear. Megan dropped the first two officers in the far flank with sleep spells, and Peter laid down the next dozen with words of destruction. They writhed on the ground and were succinctly trampled by the Quillatory that pressed forward, trying to get into Artemy. From the squads inside Artemy came another round of spells, causing tremendous chaos for the unsuspecting enemy. Scatter clips flew through the air, some of them dragging the enemy with them until they reached something solid enough in which to stick. Still, it was all the Artemians could do to protect themselves, as the lines of vehicles and the near flank poured into the magical world.
"Rufus, I need numbers," Simba roared.
Immediately, the Squirrelicorn flew up, and hovering just below the barbed wire ceiling, counted out a quick estimate and dropped to the cheetah's back.
1,000 at least. They're backed up all the way to the nursery," Rufus reported. "More than I expected."
"How many of ours down?"
Rufus flew up again to look around, and then darted into Artemy and returned.
12 down out here, at least 2 dozen down inside."
Simba roared his displeasure, which caused several nearby members of the Quillatory to hit the dirt.
"Double up your attacks. Make them permanent," he roared. "They are recovering from your spells. Your comrades are falling."
Alex and Megan pulled out their permanent power weapons. Within 30 minutes, the two of them, working in beautiful tandem, rendered 44 Quillatory members permanently frozen in odd poses, using Alex's splatter paint combined with Megan's nutcracker ice dance. As the squads behind the fantastic Simba shield met their marks, a few of them falling back with stray pellet wounds, the squads inside nailed the enemy with fireball dragons, stinging soliloquies, splatter paint, fire steps, itch glue, slam poetry, scatter clips, slash singing, blinding highlights, and the dreaded Shakespearean theatre curse from those who had no qualms about inflicting mortal fencing wounds on their enemies. Lani and Sam Heed weren't quite as fortunate. Sam Heed, though he thought he had prepared himself for this, soon found himself face to face with his father. And unlike with General Blair, Sam Heed hesitated a split second too long in this matchup, and Mr. Birkesh took advantage by slamming his son in the head and chest with a shield. Sam Heed groaned and fell. Immediately, Lani reacted with a paralyzing taunt at Sam Heed's father, but the man fell forward instead of backward, crashing on top of the young girl and trapping her under his weight.
It took her several minutes to free herself, trying to cast spells at other enemies while struggling. Her leg caught quite firmly underneath Mr. Birkesh. A sharp, rusty corner of the man's armour dug into her calf. With one tremendous effort, she broke free, ripping a nasty gash in her leg in the process.
"Sam!"
she cried, but Samhead was out cold. Blood poured from his nose, which was obviously broken. Lani dragged him with a sort of superhuman strength to a protected spot behind a tree and took a moment to rip a piece from her already shredded pant leg and wrap up her own gushing wound. Samhead groaned and moved his head weakly. The left side of his face was rapidly swelling up and turning purple.
"Stay still," hissed Lani.
Samhead opened the only eye that would open. He coughed, swallowed painfully, and whispered,
"Kill him."
Lani gave him a wild, pleading look.
"Oh, Sam, I can't."
Samhead looked at her for a long moment. Then he nodded weakly and tried to smile.
"It's okay."
He rolled to his side and spit blood, then took a deep breath and rose shakily to his feet.
"I'll be right back." "No, Sam," Lani whispered.
Samhead staggered over to his father, released the paralyzing spell and waited for Mr. Birkesh to stand and get his bearings again. The boy stood nearly eye to eye with the man.
"Father!"
Mr. Birkesh glared. He pulled a knife from his belt and held it to Samhead's neck. Lani ran toward them.
"No!" she cried. "Father,"
Samhead said, his voice deathly calm. Mr. Birkesh's hand trembled slightly as his face grew red. He spoke in harsh, drawn-out words.
"Don't speak to me. You are no son of mine."
And then he hesitated no longer, rearing back with the knife and roaring,
"Die a thousand deaths!"
He plunged it through the air toward Samhead. Samhead shook, but he made no move to stop him. Lani screamed.
"No, Samhead!"
She began uttering another paralyzing taunt, just as a thin voice from somewhere above her uttered a sharp, rhyming curse. Immediately, Mr. Birkesh flew backward in the air and landed on the ground. His hand relaxed on the knife, and it fell in the grass. Samhead sank to his hands and knees, shaking his head in disbelief, sobs and blood clutching at his throat.
"I had to know," he choked out, "if he would really do it."
Lani tossed off a quick handful of spells at the other quillatory nearby, and when they were all temporarily contained, she looked up to see where the voice had come from. In the tree sat Mr. Siegfried Appleblossom. He hopped to the ground nimbly, walked over to Mr. Birkesh, and putting a foot on his chest, tugged at something. Soon he pulled out a small, thin fencing sword, as clear as an icicle. He ceremoniously wiped it clean on the grass, gave it a quick polish with his hanky, handed it to the wounded boy, and said,
"Your father is a beast beyond compare. You proved you have more dignity and grace. Your worth to me, it's more than I can share."
He paused tearfully, took a steadying breath, and continued,
"Now go inside, have someone fix your face."
And with that, Mr. Appleblossom returned to his post in the tree. Once the Quillatory's front line had turned into a magical pile of stiffs, Simba roared,
"Advance!"
Inch by inch, yard by yard, Simba moved forward on the Quillatory, his squad close behind, and the other squads following in their wake. As many Quillatory soldiers as were able to get past the great stone statue did so, easing their way into the magical world to face a new group of attackers. The afternoon wore on, Simba unwavering, though chipped in spots. Alex gaining confidence as the battle continued. Megan temporarily set back by a melee attack that left her slashed from shoulder to elbow before she was able to stop the three attackers with a fire step that sent them running away. It was nearing sunset on the desolate side of the wall when all those of the Quillatory who hadn't made it into Artime had been contained in one fashion or another. Simba sent Rufus to Clare Morning with this news as the squads outside of Artime regrouped and refueled on water and food that somehow had appeared at the gate, delivered by some brave protector. When the Squirrelicorn returned, he bore this news.
"Miss Morning is sending out the night watch. She requests the backup squads deliver the injured into the mansion at once."
Rufus took a deep breath and continued. "Simba," he shook his head almost as if he were reluctant to deliver the rest of the message,
"Claire wants you and Alex to meet her on the mansion roof immediately."
Alex, who was resting against the wall, blinked.
"How am I supposed to get up there?"
Simba nodded.
Thank you, Rufus. Stowe, climb aboard.
Alex didn't hesitate. He hopped on the cheetah's slick stone back, settled between the wings, and wrapped his arms around Simba's broad neck. With a power greater than any force that Alex had felt before, the cheetah flapped his wings and ascended over the carnage. Seconds later, they landed on the mansion roof, Simba leaving a hearty dent in the shiny metallic shingles. Alex stared at the property below, littered with bodies and small smoking bits of fiery weapons. His nose crinkled at the smell of smoke and blood. Nearly the entire lawn, from the giant wall on his left all the way to the jungle in front of him and to the sea on his right, was occupied by fighting pairs in hand-to-hand combat. He scanned the property for Samhede and Lani, but he couldn't find them.
"Well done, Simba."
Claire Morning spoke in a smooth, firm tone. She had a bandage on her shoulder, the center of it stained with blood.
"They've nearly run out of ammunition for their guns. Many thanks go to you, my friend, for rendering so many of their pellets useless."
Simba nodded.
"Casualties?"
Claire tugged at her hair, deep in thought.
"We have many injured. Two of ours have died from their wounds so far."
Simba growled his dissatisfaction.
"And the enemy?"
"Scores of them. It's difficult to tell who is frozen from spells and who is dead, though General Blair is most assuredly dead. Needless to say, they are hurting, and that is why I've called you here. We've word that they are sending in a second wave."
"What? Tonight? In the dark? Fools! We'll crush them."
Claire nodded.
"We will with this method. Gunner reports that much of their ammunition has misfired, and their guns are either clogging up, useless, or backfiring due to opposite soliloquies. So they are injuring themselves quite nicely. But there is one thing I thought of, and it leaves me more than a little concerned."
"What is it?"
"Justine."
The cheetah's stone forehead rippled.
"I don't understand."
Claire glanced at Alex, and then back to Simba.
"She's coming."
Simba's face softened and grew concerned, and then Alex thought, for a moment, that he saw a thread of fear trickling into the giant cat's marble eyes.
"I see,"
he said gruffly, and then he added,
"She'll expose herself if she uses any of her magic."
Claire nodded.
"Father thinks she's growing desperate enough to risk it."
Alex had no idea what they were talking about. Justine could do magic? And who was Claire's father? Mr. Today? He hung on to every word because it seemed so terribly important.
"What do you propose?"
"Florence, Octavia, and I can handle Justine and the governors," Claire said, her voice bitter just saying Justine's name. "But she's leaving the palace exposed. And Father is the only one who knows the secret entrance. He wants you to accompany him. If we can disarm and seal the palace, she'll be trapped with no place to hide, and this will soon be over. Not just for us, but for the people of Quill as well."
"And the boy?"
"He's to go with you. Father doesn't want Justine anywhere near him."
She turned suddenly toward the sea and put her hand to her forehead, trying to block the sheen of sunset on the waves.
"There,"
she said, pointing to a gleaming white boat in the distance.
"He's waiting."
Alex, surprised at the turn of events, hitched himself onto the cheetah's back once again. The thrill of the flight and the powerful wing strokes, 100 feet above the vast sea, shook his ribs as he slid around on the cheetah's slippery back, trying to find a comfortable position without falling off. Soon enough, the statue reached Mr. Today. Simba closed the gap between them until he hovered just feet above the swiftly moving craft.
"Now,"
he growled over his shoulder to Alex.
"Slide off my left side."
Shivering, Alex did what he was told and dropped onto the deck. Mr. Today grasped his arm and helped him right himself as gale force winds from Simba's immense wings blasted the boy about like an empty paper cup. Simba rose to a more comfortable altitude and easily stayed with the ship as they skimmed around the shore. Alex stared.
"It really is just an island," he said, shaking his head in disbelief.
All the years, the governors had lied to everyone. It was crazy. He peered ahead at the islands in the distance, growing closer as they rounded Quill. Mr. Today glanced at Alex.
"There's an entire string of islands out there, most of them inhabited by good, decent people. But we lost contact with all of them when we built the wall."
The The old mage stood at the helm, his hair looking perfectly normal for the occasion. He looked weary. Alex's teeth chattered with anticipation and the cool evening sea breeze.
"Where are we going, exactly?"
"Ah," sighed Mr. Today. "I suppose we can't just enjoy the ride tonight, can we?" "No, indeed. Why I don't take this thing out more often is quite beyond me. I used to take Claire fishing." He shook his head, forcing his thoughts back to the threat at hand. "We're going to the palace. You know about the secret entrance into Quill, do you not?"
"Yes, well, Arya mentioned it, and so did Ms. Morning just now."
"Well, it's been many years since we devised it and added the magic. I think I can find it. Once we're in, we'll have a few encounters if the guards are still around, I imagine. You and I will freeze them up or some such thing. Then we'll seal the palace so that if Justine makes it out of Artime, she'll have lost her power, so to speak."
"The palace is her power?"
Mr. Today furrowed his brow. "Not exactly. Her power is the fear she instills in people. She hides behind the palace so that Quill can't see that she is afraid, too."
"What is she afraid of?"
The mage laughed bitterly. "She's afraid of losing her power to make people afraid. She's afraid of not being in control, appearing weak." Alex thought about all of this. It was hard to imagine that the stately woman was afraid of anything. But there was another question in his mind that had been eating away at him since the night he'd gone to the gate. He hesitated, not sure if he should ask, but finally gathered up the nerve as they sped along, rounding a particularly jutting piece of the island.
"Mr. Today?"
"Yes, lad?"
"You said that you made the people of Quill forget."
Mr. Today nodded thoughtfully. "Yes, I did that."
"Why?"
He scratched his chin. "To keep them from dissenting when Justine began to rule. Because back then I believed in Justine's plan when she took the title of High Priest, that the best way to rule people was to protect them from everything and frighten them into obedience. I believed in it so much that I gave my full trust to Justine for years, and didn't always notice what she was up to. And because of that failure on my part, she came up with the plan to segregate the least useful in our society. I offered my services, because I was a better mage than she. It wasn't difficult to render them useless. I just had to put the unwanteds in a splatter paint spell, or paralyze them, or make them fall asleep, then let them stand around on the lawn outside the walls of Quill. No mess." He shook his head sadly, horrified at his own actions, as tears glistened and seeped into the wrinkles around his eyes. "But then Justine wanted to go a step further, a step too far, in my opinion, at the time. She convinced me to create the Great Lake of Boiling Oil, and then she proceeded to eliminate the unwanteds permanently. I was horrified, but I didn't let on. She was so powerful and power-hungry by then that she wouldn't have hesitated to eliminate me if I defied her, and I knew I had to stop her. So I pretended to be behind her actions fully, and I offered to take over the business of dumping all the remaining bodies, which allowed Justine to have more time to do the rest of her job." He sighed. "So I hid them, using magic, and every year froze and hid the newest group that had been purged."
"What?" Alex bit his lip. "What made you decide to make Artime?"
"There was a little girl," he said softly. "You see, Alex, you have to understand how it all started. 50 years ago I was young, just a little older than you, and I was foolish. I went along with Justine, disappearing every purge day to put spells on the unwanteds. By the time Justine wanted to actually eliminate them entirely, I had a wife, a child, some dear friends in the government, one especially. And each year, once I took over, I pretended to eliminate the unwanteds, but merely did as I'd done before, casting spells on them, and then hiding them with another spell so Justine couldn't see. But it became hard to cast these spells on children I had grown to care about. One little girl in particular. And I knew it was wrong. All of it was so, so wrong. I decided that if I were to change things and be a better man, I had to release them from these spells and let them live their lives. I had to create a secret haven for them. But I couldn't just create it and then leave them. So I did what I had to do. I left my life, my friends, my family in Quill, and created Artime.
and I sold the idea to Justine as a way to build even more fear in the hearts of the children and scare them into submission. I would hermit myself away and become the dreaded death farmer that no one actually saw unless they were unwanted.
"Wow," Alex said, and took it all in. After a moment, he looked up at the mage. "So originally you chose power like Justine, back when you were young, but then you changed," he said. "You became good. So maybe Aaron..."
Mr. Today smiled. "We will never lose hope, my boy." Alex puzzled for a long moment, gazing over the water.
Were you secretly in love with Justine or something? Is that why you went along with her?"
Mr. Today afforded a chuckle. "No, Alex, not in the slightest. Not any more than you could be secretly in love with your twin."
Alex stared at the mage. "Wait, you mean..."
The old man nodded sagely. "You and I," he murmured, "have a lot in common." They closed in on the south side of the island, where the ground grew hilly. Alex thought that they were probably near the palace, but not a thing could be seen of Quill because of the hideous wall.
"Who was the little girl?"
Alex asked presently, although he thought he knew. "My daughter, Claire. Miss Morning." Alex nodded.
"You couldn't cast the spell?"
"No." Mr. Today looked away, a wistful expression on his face.
"And so you created Artemy for her?"
Mr. Today nodded as he pulled the yacht closer to shore and cut the motor. "And for all of you. Best thing I've ever done. Still, it's not enough to make up for all the wrongs," he said. "Whatever I do, it'll never be enough." He scanned the rocks, muttering something to himself as he searched to remember the exact location of the magical passage. "Aha," he whispered. Simba landed gracefully on the rocks next to the boat. Mr. Today placed the anchor spell, while Alex climbed over the side of the craft, and the two embarked onto Simba's back for the short journey to dry land. Once they reached the shore, Mr. Today put his hand on the wall and recited an incantation. A great chunk of the concrete block slid aside, and the three walked through it. They found themselves in a dark, narrow, enclosed room. Mr. Today recited a second incantation, and the wall in front of them crumbled to dust. They stepped over it and looked around the dimly lit passageway. Everything was grey, just like all of Quill. The ceilings were very high, the hallway just wide enough for Simba to walk through without scraping his wings on the walls.
"Be ready," Mr. Today whispered in the echoing chamber. "There will be 6 guards, but they'll most likely be stationed at the entrance."
Alex fingered his pens and balls of clay inside his vest pocket. They moved slowly into the heart of the palace. First Simba, then Mr. Today, and then Alex bringing up the rear. They passed doorways on the left and the right, Simba sampling the air, his ears tuned and twitching this way and that. After a moment he stopped short and pointed with a long, sharp claw. Mr. Today and Alex squeezed past Simba's body to get a look. 4 Quillatory guards stood at the windows near the palace entrance, peering out, and 2 more sat leaning against the wall, asleep.
Mr. Today gestured. Alex nodded, and together they attacked. Alex flicked his paintbrush at the first sleeping guard. The paint seeped over him entirely, and within seconds it solidified. Then he tossed 2 tiny balls of clay at the second sleeping guard. The clay stretched and clamped the guard's legs to the floor and his arms to the wall. Alex whispered, "Silence!" as the surprised guard awoke. But the guards at the door heard the noise and whirled around. They all shrieked in terror at the sight of Simba, but 2 of them still had the presence of mind to pull their guns and point. One managed to get a shot off before Mr. Today simply turned all 4 of them to stone. The bullet pinged off the palace wall harmlessly, leaving a small chip in it.
"A souvenir for Justine," Mr. Today said. Alex grinned and looked around.
"That's it?"
Simba grumbled.
"Well, that was boring."
Mr. Today teasingly sympathized with the great beast.
"Oh, Sim, I'm sorry. Say, how about you eat that one over there,
The silenced, shackled guard's eyes widened in fear.
Simba grunted and moved back down the hallway from which they had come, anxious to get back to the action in Artemis.
"Patience," Mr. Today said.
He waved a hand at the palace entrance, and the doorway became a solid wall. He turned in a circle in the large entrance, pointing all around, sealing up all the windows and doors throughout the entire structure. There was no way into or out of the palace now, except for the secret passage.
"Well, that should do it. They won't be able to get back in." "Nice work, by the way, Alex," Mr. Today said. "I rather liked that clay spell. Did you create that yourself?"
"I did," Alex said proudly.
"It certainly seems solid," Mr. Today remarked, leaning over and rapping his knuckles on the frightened man's shackles. "You'll have to teach me that one sometime."
Alex beamed.
"Remind me that we'll need to come back and feed these guards in a few days, will you?" Mr. Today said lightly.
"Sure," Alex said. "So this is it? You're sure there are no more guards?"
"Only 6. I've watched carefully over the years. Justine had little to fear."
"Until we came along," Alex said a bit smugly.
Simba rolled his eyes impatiently and moved farther down the hallway.
"Marcus."
"Oh dear. Quite right, Sim. We should be getting back."
His face turned grim, as if he had just remembered that the people of Artemis were still fighting. Simba growled impatiently and glided back down the hallway the same way they had come. Mr. Today hurried after him, and Alex, feeling a bit relieved despite his concern over the battle in Artemis, followed them into the narrow passage, his mind overflowing with more questions for the mage. And so it was that when a fist, like a bolt of lightning, shot out from what seemed like nowhere, Alex toppled like a toy soldier.
Severing Ties. A stunned Alex lay still for a short time until he had figured out what happened. He quickly reached for a weapon and cried out to Mr. Today for help. Mr. Today turned to see what the commotion was, just as Alex pointed the highlighter at his brother and wildly shot a round of blindness spells, missing Aaron but hitting Mr. Today squarely in the eyes, causing him to double over in pain and lower himself blindly to the floor.
"Simba!" shouted the mage.
Simba, who had made it all the way to the secret passage, had to back up the entire way because nowhere was it wide enough to allow him to turn around. He roared his frustration and scuttled ungracefully in reverse. Aaron, eyeing the others, stood near one of the palace guards. Pure hatred dripped from his features.
"You useless, unwanted piece of dirt!" Aaron seethed. "You ruined my life with this! When this battle is over, Justine will dispose of me, and it's all your fault. Why couldn't you leave me alone?"
In his hand he held something small and shiny.
Alex's eyes widened.
"Aaron, why won't you just believe me? You'll stoop to anything, won't you?"
As he talked, buying time, he scrambled for a ball of clay, a fire dragon, a handful of scatter clips, anything. But his supplies were substantially depleted after the long day, and he had to dig deep to grasp hold of anything. As Mr. Today hurriedly neutralized the blind spell on himself, and as Simba scrambled backward, nearly trampling the mage in order to reach the wide foyer where he could turn himself around, and as Alex scooted on his backside along the cold floor, searching wildly for something with which to defend himself, and finally landing his fingers on a frieze brush, Aaron pulled his arm back and shouted,
"I hope you die a 1,000 deaths!"
He threw the metal object with all his might. Alex, hearing the horridly familiar words, seeing the scatterclip, suddenly realized the meaning of Lani's note.
"No!"
He pointed the frieze brush frantically at Aaron and uttered a curse, hitting his mark as the scatterclip whizzed toward him. Mr. Today cried out and cast a glass wall spell, trying to stop the scatterclip. But it was too late. The simple, innocent scatterclip, combined with the words to make it lethal, had found its mark in Alex's chest. Simba finally turned around, crashed through the glass wall, and looked from one twin to the other, at first unsure which boy was which. Mr. Today pointed wildly at Aaron, frozen in place, and Simba immediately pounced on the frozen boy, bringing him crashing to the ground. Aaron screamed, his mouth stuck open, his eyes begging Simba not to hurt him. Mr. Today rushed to Alex's side as the boy fell back, his eyes glazing over, a look of surprise turning to horror on his face. He grasped the air wildly, unable to get hold of the clip that had embedded itself through his vest and into his chest, and gasped for air.
"Don't kill him,"
Alex managed to rasp, before he lost consciousness. Lani helped Samhede into the mansion as one of the protectors met them at the door. They got Samhede settled into the newly created hospital wing alongside others with various wounds. Quickly, Lani washed and bandaged her leg, and despite the protector's protest, she went back outside as the sun was setting, just as a large shadow passed overhead. She looked up and saw Simba flying elegantly out to sea with a passenger, and she wondered briefly what that was all about. But she didn't have time to think about it. She scurried toward her commander, Arya, at their station point, pelting 10 minutes sleep spells left and right along the way.
"Lani!" It was Florence. "I need you at the front line!"
Lani glanced over at Arya, who nodded. Lani followed Florence to the entrance just as a new line of squealing vehicles and marching Quillatory soldiers poured in, yelling wildly. These soldiers had no guns. Rather, their weapons were quite unrecognizable to anyone who had not grown up in a family that collected rusty scrap metal. The Artemians blasted the Quillatory as they arrived, causing a pile-up of hard-shelled, stiffened bodies, such that the last vehicles couldn't get through without driving over them, and even then most of the jalopies conked out. As darkness settled, and the various jungle creatures that could see quite well in the dark came out to fight, the confusion grew. Lani positioned herself behind a tree, finding it difficult to tell who was friend and who was foe. And then a rumor spread its way to her ears. "The governors have arrived." Lani shivered. The governors? Her mind raced back over the previous months as she had struggled with the decision. Would she use lethal weapons? She had ultimately decided that she would not, with one exception. And now, as she peered out into the darkness and confusion, that exception was slipping inside Artemie and stealing toward her, carrying a pistol in hand, the kind that only the governors owned. The pistol, Lani knew, was 100 times stronger than the weak pellet guns that some of the Quillatory had. One shot could kill a full-grown human or beast. Lani reached into her vest, her eyes narrowing as she glued them on her father. She took out her one and only throwing star, which Samhede had given her when she'd asked him for it months ago. She pressed the metal to her lips and whispered an incantation as her father slipped along the wall, darting between trees, his pistol gleaming whenever it caught a ray of moonlight. She followed him to a clump of trees.
"He's going to hide. Lie in wait. What a coward!"
She grew angrier and angrier as all the thoughts of the purge flooded back to her. How his shame must have been so great that he could not even acknowledge her goodbye at the gate.
A coward,
she thought over and over again, until it became a challenge to her to make him admit it was so.
Beg me not to kill you. See how it feels.
All she knew was that she would not give her father a chance like Samhede had done for his father. She had learned her lessons well enough today. She crept closer and watched him from 10 feet away, thinking how stupid he must be not to notice he was being followed.
"Your intelligence and your strength won't save you now, dear father."
Lani shifted to get a better view. She couldn't see what her father was doing. As she moved around the tree trunk, her vest caught on a tiny branch. It snapped off. Lani froze as Senior Governor Haluki turned sharply at the noise.
"Who's there?"
he whispered sharply. Lani held her breath. And then, because she was not a coward like her father, she stepped out from behind the tree into the shadows.
"Claire?"
Senior Governor Haluki said uncertainly. Fingering her weapon, the metal growing hot in her fingers, Lani stepped closer, her rage increasing.
"No, father," she spat. "It's me. Or have you forgotten me, like all the others conveniently forget their children?"
A tiny sob caught in her throat as she twisted her arm behind her expertly, just as Samhede had taught her, and prepared to fire. Governor Haluki sucked in a breath.
"Oh, Lani,"
he whispered. He glanced over his shoulder in each direction, and then stepped toward his daughter, holding out his hand just as she snapped her wrist and sent the deadly star in flight.
"No, Lani, you don't understand," he cried.
The star struck him at an awkward angle.
As he fell to the ground, rolling and writhing wildly in pain, his body transformed into an enormous grey wolf. He took off, running, tripping, limping into the night. The gun lay gleaming on the ground where he had stood. Simba, with the unconscious bleeding Alex cradled gently in his enormous jaws, and the captured, now thawed, terrorized Aaron, hanging on to Simba's neck for dear life, nodded to Mr. Today and sped fluidly along the shore, leapt into the air, and flapped his powerful wings. He rose up high enough to clear the great wall and flew in a direct path this time, at his top speed, over the barbed wire ceiling that covered the land of Quill. Aaron cried desperately in fear all the way, knowing that falling would mean certain death, but that hanging on might give him another option, eventually. Mr. Today cruised around the perimeter in the boat, which could magically sense the reefs and rocks in the dark. As the waves pounded the sides of the craft, the weary man's eyes filled with grief. He whispered constantly, pulling at his hair.
"Not Alex. Please, not him. It can't happen like this. Marcus, you careless fool, how many more deaths will you be responsible for?"
When he neared Artemae, he slowed and cast the anchor spell. Simba, without either boy now, swooped to within sight in the moonlit evening, and the man climbed nimbly on the cheetah's back.
"How is he?" Marcus asked in a low voice.
"Still alive," Simba said. "Your enchantment of the vest may have saved him."
"And the twin, Aaron?"
Simba roared in frustration.
"He screamed and pounded me the whole way. Finally he jumped as we flew over the inlet at the shore of Artemae. I expect he'll have drowned by now, or been eaten by sharks. I left him. It was more important to get Alex inside. He's lost a lot of blood."
And indeed, the blood had stained Simba's sandstone mouth and neck, making him look fiercer than ever.
"But we have other troubles right now. Justine is holding a pistol on Claire. Gunner is missing. Florence was hit by an out-of-control vehicle, and she's lopped off at the knees. Octavia is now Septavia. She lost a tentacle, but she'll regenerate. Sean and Megan are on the roof playing sniper."
"Egads!"
"I'll say."
Mr. Today gazed across Artemae, counting the remaining Quillans, and then mused over his spell strengths and capabilities.
"There are less than 100 of them left," he said. "I think I can stop the remaining ones now on my own. And Quill has seen enough to know we are a strong force to be reckoned with. They'll think twice about fighting us again, which means our future is safe from further attacks. Yes, my friend, it's time. You and I both know the only spell that will end this."
"I hate to do it."
"It won't hurt them."
"That's exactly why I hate to do it," growled the cheetah. "Though you might catch Aaron in it, which would keep him out of our hair for now."
Mr. Today patted the cheetah's smooth neck.
"You had your moment of glory in the palace, Sim. You've saved Alex, and you'll have another one soon. In the meantime, Claire will be all right, won't she?"
"I certainly hope so."
"Justine won't shoot her without me there. She'll want me to witness it. I'm sure she thinks it'll be symbolic."
Mr. Today's voice was bitter.
"I imagine Claire knows that, too."
"All right, then. It's settled."
"Here we go, my friend."
Simba took a pass along the seashore from mansion to jungle as Mr. Today held out his hand over the lawn. Back and forth they flew, Mr. Today keeping his hand out and concentrating very hard to hold the spell on so many people, Simba being very careful to weave just so across the property, trying not to miss any of it, as if he were mowing the lawn. When they had covered all the land up to the entrance to Quill, Mr. Today, barely holding on to the weighty spell, whispered,
"Quillatory, take a dive,"
and snapped his fingers. Immediately, and as one body, the remaining mobile Quillatory stopped fighting, turned, and marched their way to the seashore. The Artemaeans, who had a moment ago been fighting, now caught their breath and watched in surprise as the Quillatory stopped and stood in the shallow water. Simba flew over them.
"Freeze," Mr. Today said.
The water at the shore froze, trapping all the Quillatory in place, making them furious, but oddly cooling off some of the hotheads nicely. The people and creatures of Artemae looked up at their leader and broke into applause.
"All right, Simba,
Take me to Claire, and then stay alert. Watch for my signal.
Lani gasped and clapped her hand to her mouth as the great grey wolf stumbled off. She was confused.
Father,
she whispered, but he was already gone. She had seen the wolf before from a distance, and she'd thought it odd that such a wild creature would have bounded out of the mansion the previous day, only to disappear again shortly thereafter. And then it all began to make sense.
Oh, Father, what have I done? What have you done?
Gingerly, she picked up the gun, feeling its weight in her hand, remembering when she was 10 and her father had let her hold it, had even taken her to the Quillatory Range on Purge Day when she was 11 to teach her how to carry it safely, and to let her shoot it when no one else was around. He had made her promise not to tell anyone. That was one secret she'd kept, because it seemed too sacred a moment to work into one of her wild stories. But to her now, the gun represented awful things. She disarmed the gun and slid it into her vest, realizing that despite her knowledge of its workings, and all her father had taught her, perhaps even in preparation for this day, she could never, ever use it. She snuck off through the trees, growing wearier and hungrier as the evening slipped into night, and suddenly wondered what had happened to Alex, for it had been hours since she'd last seen him. She stopped short. She thought, wondering if she could manage to do one of Alex's favorite spells. She withdrew a paintbrush from her pocket, whispered,
"Invisible,"
and brushed herself up and down with it. The last thing to disappear was the gleam in her eye. Back at the mansion, the injured Samhead had too much time to think about how his actions as Will's assistant had contributed to the battle raging. And seeing his father again, once his hero, so willing to kill his own son. How could Samhead have ever wanted to go back there, be a part of that? Now the guilt overcame him, and he could lie still no longer with this battle raging around him. He struggled to his feet, slipped his component vest on, and when the caretakers weren't looking, he limped outside. As the entire remaining Quillatory marched into the sea, a drenched, bedraggled body finally hoisted himself up to his feet on the beach. He coughed and spit seawater, and began wiping the sand from his face and clothes. In the dark, he located the looming mansion, and stole quietly in that direction, limping and squishing slightly. He stepped over bodies until he found one wearing a vest like Alex's. Aaron disrobed the fallen Artemian and slipped the vest over his own shoulders, feeling for the one magical item he actually knew how to use. He found a treasure of them and took one, rubbing it between his fingers, his eyes darting wildly now, looking for prey.
I'll earn my position back. I must prove myself to the High Priest. I'll find the old man and I will kill him, and then I'll finish off Alex once and for all.
At the corner of the mansion, Aaron stood, deep in the shadows. He saw her, the great High Priest, the one he would do anything for in order to regain her favor. He knew that now he must be Alex, act like Alex. They must not suspect. He only hoped no one had yet heard what had really happened to his twin. As he watched Mr. Today approach, he looked around at the bizarre assortment of creatures. "Alex," someone whispered. Aaron jumped and turned sharply, coming face to face with a sharp-toothed alligator that had several spindly arms. He nearly screamed in fright. "Alex," Miss Octavia whispered again, "be ready with your scatter clips. The lethal verbal component is die a thousand deaths. If Justine makes any false moves, do your worst, my boy. She'll have to die if any of this is to be resolved. Are you comfortable with that?"
Aaron blinked, sucked in a breath, and nodded. He didn't understand half of what the creature was saying, but it was enough to know that he had accidentally stumbled upon the verbal component to the spell, which was also the mantra of the Quillatory. He held the clip poised, appearing ready to throw in the direction of Justine,
but his eyes burned into the back of the head of Mr. Today, who stood only slightly to the side of the High Priest. Samhede, seeing the High Priest, crept forward behind the Octagator and Alex, realizing the severity of the scene before him. Justine and Mr. Today about to be face to face once again. He remained quiet, pulling a throwing star from his vest in case it was needed. If only he could take down Justine, it would prove to everyone that he was not a traitor. Miss Octavia readied herself as well, and then glanced more carefully at the boy beside her. She frowned. Something didn't seem right. Samhede noticed her glance, and he took another look at Alex, at the way he stood, at his hand that held the scatter clip. Samhede's eyes narrowed, and then flashed with fire. He and Will Blair had been studying Alex for months. He knew what was wrong. This boy held the scatter clip in his right hand.
"It's not Alex," Samhede whispered.
Aaron's eyes widened in surprise. He tried to run, but Samhede muttered,
"Break a leg!"
which made Aaron squeal in pain and hop on one foot. In one swift, smooth motion, four of Miss Octavia's remaining seven appendages threaded and twisted over and under the boy's arms and around his legs, rendering his struggles useless and forcing his good leg to buckle. He dropped to the ground.
"Silence," she said in a low voice.
Aaron's cry died in his throat. He shook violently, helplessly.
"Well done, Samhede," Miss Octavia said. "Don't move another inch, Aaron Stowe, or you're a dead man," she growled in his ear, and chomped her teeth together to keep from biting his head completely off.
"Hello again," Mr. Today said coldly as he approached the High Priest's vehicle. All around him were piles of wounded, sleeping, or splatter-painted quillatry. On the road beyond the High Priest, a pile-up of smoking vehicles groaned in various stages of death. The rest of Artemis' walking wounded, suddenly bereft of their enemies, picked their way around bodies and fell in behind their leader, ready to carry on if necessary for as long as they could stand and draw breath.
"Marcus, my dear," came the sarcastic reply, "I've been waiting for you."
"How terribly polite."
"Indeed," she said.
The High Priest Justine sat on the seat of her vehicle with Claire Mourning tucked securely under one arm, a pistol pointed at Claire's temple. Governor Strang sat beside her, his pistol trained on Megan Ranger, who lay on the corner of the mansion roof nearest them. Four more governors stood at the entrance with their pistols, pointing randomly at anyone who dared move. Only Senior Governor Haluki was missing.
"Your young protégé, Aaron, sends his regards. Shame that you should punish him. He's the one who might have saved you all," Mr. Today said evenly.
Justine's eyes narrowed.
"Oh, come now, Justine. Why so suspicious? Have you forgotten our little secret passage to the palace?" he asked. "And oh dear, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Good heavens! You're missing a governor! Pity!"
The four standing governors wavered, casting sidelong glances at one another in the starlight.
"Dear me! And have you told your governors about your secret gift? You know," he whispered loudly, "magic!"
"Enough!"
shouted Justine.
"You do not deny it?"
"Silence, you traitor!"
Marcus Today smiled a small smile.
"Justine, honestly, have you no secrets on me that you can reveal to my people? So that they might gaze at me as suspiciously as your governors are now looking at you? Surely there must be something."
Justine glared at Mr. Today. She cocked the hammer of the pistol that grazed Claire's temple. Claire closed her eyes reflexively, and then opened them again, granting permission to her father to do whatever it took.
"What have you done with Aaron?" Justine growled.
"Hmm? Oh, the twin! Well, there was a bit of a skirmish at the palace, you see. You know how it is with twins."
He chuckled hollowly.
"Best of friends, worst of enemies, all that rot. I imagine he's around here somewhere. Pity he isn't coming to your aid."
Justine snarled and looked at Claire, judging her features.
"All these years, Marcus. 30 of the last 50 years you've spent betraying me and all I've stood for, all we've stood for.
after all I've done for you and for Quill. How could you?
Mr. Today sighed and looked up at the sky. He shook his head slowly and then looked back at the High Priest.
The question is, dear sister, how could you?
Justine's face burned. She stood up in the vehicle and wrenched Claire to her feet.